Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From an article in the New York Times named Surge in Homeless Children Strains School Districts by Eric Eckholm. From Asheville, North Carolina. In the small trailer her family rented over the summer, 9-year-old Charity Crowell picked out the green and purple outfit she would wear on the first day of school. She vowed to try harder and bring her grades back up from the C's she got last spring, a dismal semester when her parents lost their jobs and car and the family was evicted and migrated through friends' houses and a motel. Charity is one child in a national surge of homeless school children that is driven by relentless unemployment and foreclosures. The rise to more than 1 million students without stable housing by last spring has tested budget-battered school districts as they try to carry out their responsibilities and the federal mandate to salvage education for children whose lives are filled with insecurity and turmoil. The instability can be ruinous to schooling, educators say, adding multiple moves and lost class time to the inherent distress of homelessness. And so, in accord with the federal law, the Buncombe County District, where Charity attends, provides special bus service to shelters, motels, doubled-up houses, trailer parks, and RV campgrounds to help children stay in their familiar schools as the families move about. Still, Charity said of her last semester, "I couldn't go to sleep. I was worried about all the stuff," and she often nodded off in class. Charity and her brother Elijah Carrington, 6, were among 239 children from homeless families in her district as of last June, an increase of 80% over the last year, with indications this semester that as many or more will be enrolled in the months ahead. While current national data are not available, the number of school children in homeless families appears to have risen by 75% to 100% in many districts over the last 2 years, according to Barbara Duffield, policy director of the National Association for the Education of Homeless Children and Youth, an advocacy group. There were 679,000 homeless students reported in 2006 to 2007, a total that surpassed 1 million by last spring, Ms. Duffield said. With schools just returning to session, initial reports point to further rises. In San Antonio, for example, the district has enrolled 1,000 homeless students in the first 2 weeks of school, twice as many as at the same point last year. It's hard enough going to school and growing up, but these kids also have to worry where they'll be staying that night and whether they'll eat, said Bill Murdoch, chief executive of Eblen Kimmel Charities, a private group in Asheville that helps needy families with anything from food baskets and money for utility bills to toiletries and a prom dress. "We see 8-year-olds telling mom not to worry, don't cry," Mr. Murdoch said. Since 2001, federal law has required every district to appoint a liaison to the homeless, charged with identifying and aiding families who meet a broad definition of homelessness, doubling up in the homes of relatives or friends, or sleeping in motels or RV campgrounds, as well as living in cars, shelters, or on the streets. A small minority of districts, including Buncombe County, have used federal grants or local money to make the position full-time. The law lays out rights for homeless children, including immediate school placement without proof of residence and a right to stay in the same school as the family is displaced. Providing transportation to the original school is an expensive logistical challenge in a huge district like Buncombe County, covering 700 square miles. While the law's goals are praised, school superintendents lament that Congress has provided little money, adding to the fiscal woes of the districts. The protections are important, but Congress has passed the cost to state and local taxpayers, said Bruce Hunter, Associate Director of the American Association of School Administrators. Fairfax County, Virginia, where the number of homeless students climbed from 1,100 in June 2007 to 1,800 last spring, has three social workers dedicated to the homeless and is using a temporary stimulus grant to assign a full-time transportation coordinator to commandeer buses, issue gas cards, and sometimes call taxis to get the children to their original schools. Like Fairfax County, the Asheville area looks prosperous, drawing tourists and retirees, but manicured lawns, million-dollar homes, and golf courses mask the struggles of many adults working at low-paying jobs in sales and food service. Emily Walters, the liaison to the homeless for the Buncombe County Schools, is busy as school begins, providing backpacks and other supplies and signing children up for free breakfasts and lunches. But her job continues through the year as other families lose their footing and those who had concealed their status because of the stigma or because they were not aware of the benefits join the list. Sometimes it includes driving families in crisis to look at prospective shelters, a temporary solution at best, Ms. Walters said. When the county receives a two-year stimulus grant next month, she said, she hopes there will be more money to help people avoid eviction or pay security deposits for new rentals. The evening before school began, Ms. Walters drove 45 minutes to an RV campground to deliver a scientific calculator and other essential school supplies to Cody Curry, 14, who lives with his mother Dawn and his brother Zach, 11, in a camper. Mrs. Curry had to downsize from a trailer, she said, when her work as a sales clerk was cut to 2 days a week. The first day of school, Ms. Walters drove to a men's rescue shelter in the city to take Nate Fountain, 18, to high school. Nate said his parents kicked him out of the house last spring during his senior year because he was not doing his schoolwork and was drinking and using drugs. With Ms. Walters' help, he said, he expects to finish high school this semester and study culinary arts at a community college. I spend a lot of time just making sure the kids stay in school, Ms. Walters said. The busing service was especially valued by Leslie Laws, who was laid off from her job in customer service last year and lost her rental apartment. Ms. Laws and her 12-year-old son are staying in a women's shelter in Asheville, far from his former school. He is deeply involved with activities like chorus. Now he must catch the bus at 6:05 a.m. and ride 1.5 hours each way. Educators and advocates for the homeless across the country said that in the current recession, the law has made a difference, minimizing destructive gaps in schooling and linking schools with social welfare agencies. Charity Crowell, despite her vow to bring up her grades, may be in store for another rough semester. Her stepfather works long hours delivering food on commission, but business is poor. Her mother, Katrina, wants to look for a job, but that is difficult without a car. Food stamps help, but by the second half of each month, the family is mostly eating beanie weenies and noodles, Ms. Crowell said. As school resumed in late August, the family was facing eviction from the $475 a month trailer and uncertain about what to do next. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And from the New York Times, after the mortgage business imploded last year, Wall Street investment banks began searching for another big idea to make money. They think they may have found one. The bankers plan to buy life settlements, life insurance policies that ill and elderly people sell for cash. $400,000 for a $1 million policy, say, depending on the life expectancy of the insured person. Then they plan to securitize these policies, in Wall Street jargon, by packaging hundreds or thousands together into bonds. They will then resell those bonds to investors like big pension funds, who will receive the payouts when people with the insurance die. The earlier the policyholder dies, the bigger the return, though if people live longer than expected, investors could get poor returns or even lose money. Either way, Wall Street would profit by pocketing sizable fees for creating the bonds, reselling them, and subsequently trading them. But some who have studied life settlements warn that insurers might have to raise premiums in the short term if they end up having to pay out more death claims than they had anticipated. And a final news point for the week, new unemployment data show why it will take years for the labor market to recover from one of its fastest and deepest declines since World War II, even if an economic recovery is around the corner. Currently, about 14.9 million people are out of work and looking for work. The Department of Labor report released last week showed job cuts in August were lower than they've been in recent months. But a deeper look at the data shows why it will take millions of new jobs to dig American workers out of this recession's deep pit. Unemployment for teenagers stands at nearly 26%. More than 758,000 workers are so discouraged they quit looking for jobs altogether, by far the biggest such number since the Department of Labor started tracking in 1994. Damage continues to mount in the manufacturing, financial, and construction sectors. Now I'd like to continue on with the second segment of the show. First, I start with an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. I highly recommend two of their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. Also, I recommend that you look at the archives and listen to the shows Life and Debt from the Past at www.kruufm.com, where you can get a full picture of all the important points which I have raised and built upon from week to week to help you deal with debt that you have, and also to deal with a budget that can help you have some financial security now and definitely in the future. Over the course of the last year, I have talked about a lot of different issues regarding debt, trying to help you deal with it, keep out of it, and pay it off, short of the extreme situation where you may have to file bankruptcy. In the last month or so, I've been talking about bankruptcy for consumers, particularly Chapter 7, and then some on Chapter 13. Chapter 7, as I've mentioned, is a straight liquidation kind of bankruptcy where you get rid of nearly all of your unsecured debt. And Chapter 13 is there to help pay back some of the unsecured debt and also to hopefully get arrearages paid on secured loans like the home mortgage or the car payments on which you are behind, so you can keep those assets as well as the other exempt assets that you would get under state or federal law, depending on where you're filing. So I talked quite a bit about the issues regarding these kinds of bankruptcies. Last week in particular, I discussed the actual cost of going broke. Actually, of course, I mean of filing bankruptcy. Often people don't even think of this until, frankly, they are out of money and the creditors are pounding at their doors or calling them, calling their employers, calling their families, where there's lawsuits and judgments, often default judgments, with resulting garnishments and levies and executions on their property. So suddenly they're facing the need for bankruptcy in their minds, often for the first time, although it's really something that has been building over quite a while, and they just were in denial, minimization, and some kind of mental avoidance, but now they really have no choice. Yet, of course, it does cost money to file bankruptcy. Generally, if you look at the ladder of what attorneys make, from my personal experience with this area and a lot of attorneys in this area and other areas of practicing law across the country, as far as income is concerned, bankruptcy attorneys are near the bottom echelon of what attorneys make, particularly in relationship to creditor attorneys, tall building lawyers, and personal injury attorneys, etc. The reason for this, frankly, is that many of these attorneys are very interested in issues besides money, that is, helping people who really truly need some help legally and socially, not to mention emotionally. So bankruptcy attorneys do tend to be quite reasonable in their fees. But just generally, let's look at the fee structure regarding costs. The cost of a Chapter 7 bankruptcy that goes to the court is $299 now. The cost of a Chapter 13 bankruptcy is $274 that goes to the court. It's very rare that those fees can be waived, so that's a starting point. Also, under the law that came out in 2005, consumers are required to take a credit counseling course to get into bankruptcy and a debtor education course to get out of bankruptcy, presuming that the majority of the debt involved in the bankruptcy is consumer debt and not debt that's related to non-consumer issues such as business or taxes. These kinds of courses are what we call contact courses. You don't take exams taking the course. For the most part, they can be taken online or by telephone, and in some localities, they can be taken in person. There are a lot of different companies that have been approved to give these courses, some of which are extraordinarily good and some of which are quite mediocre. And the prices generally range from $35 to $50 for each of the two courses. So, for example, it could be $70 to $100 more to add to the out-of-pocket costs that have to go to the course providers. Some law firms organize that for people, which is highly recommended, and others just give a list of providers that the client can contact and arrange it his or herself. But those are unavoidable costs unless one is really in a very impoverished income situation. Some of the companies, like the one I use, which is called the Institute for Financial Literacy, actually would waive the cost of their course for people who are receiving Social Security or veterans income as their only source of income, or people who are retired on very little income also. So those fees of approximately $100 can sometimes be waived. A third cost, which some law firms require, and I frankly believe it's a very good idea, is to get an electronic credit report uploaded into the system on behalf of the client. This gives a very strong foundation for which creditors have been reporting to the credit reporting agencies, all three of them, and what they are reporting, proper addresses, and often there are creditors that are listed there which the client does not even know about. So this is a pretty good thing to do, because we want to get notice to all of the different creditors in order to protect the client who is filing bankruptcy. So if one is paying $30 to $50 to get that credit report to a provider, it is well worth it in the long run. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So then the last point is the actual attorney's fees. Of course, attorney's fees vary depending on where you live and how complex your case is. And now, since the new law, most law firms have increased their fees by 30 to 50% since 2005 because there's so much more paperwork that needs to be done, and there's a lot more risk for attorneys, which is called due diligence, at least theoretically, under the new law. So attorneys are very cautious, and with the added amount of paperwork in particular, the overhead has gone up. Of course, like any other service, the rates do vary, even in the same locality. And also, an important issue is the services that are being given. For example, as I mentioned before, some law firms do not organize the credit counseling course or the debtor education course for the client. It may seem like a small thing, but I see many clients in court at their 341 meetings that have not done that properly, or who fail to take the debtor education course after the filing, and there is the possibility that their case is dismissed. So it is good to have a professional who is helping you to organize and who knows all of the inside issues in doing those kinds of courses. Another thing that I mentioned is that now, particularly because of the kind of traveling and gas costs, etc., and time that attorneys spend at these hearings, particularly if they're traveling, some law firms now no longer go to the hearing with the client. They have a local attorney in the hearing city represent the client. I imagine some clients do not care much about that, but in my experience, I find that is very emotionally challenging to people I see who are for the first time meeting an attorney who is representing them at the 341 meeting. So this is a kind of service that is different than other attorneys or firms where the attorney who has been dealing with your case is in fact present in the hearing room with you and is helping you through the 341 meeting. Another component of full service, I feel, is that when you call the law office, you get to speak to the attorney who is handling your case when there are legal issues that come up and are not directed to some person in the office who is not your attorney to answer your question. In short, there are a lot of these kinds of legal issues and service issues that are involved in a case, so you have to be comfortable with your choice of law firms and what they are providing, and of course what they are not providing for you. As I mentioned in the past, your rapport with your attorney is really critical, and ideally your attorney should be someone who could help you relieve the stress that is naturally associated with something like filing bankruptcy. That is something that will be a clear feeling when you meet the attorney and are dealing with him or her. And of course, you will get a legal contract, representation, and fee agreement, which should be thorough and clear, and it should not have a whole lot of fine print that you don't understand or that is very, very complicated and covers things that you have difficulty in comprehending. With all that said, you still have to make that decision on who is going to be your legal representative, which I highly recommend. Not something you should do with a petition preparer or some kind of online high volume company that you really don't get to deal with the attorneys personally and directly. And of course, you don't want to do it by yourself in terms of what is called a pro se kind of filing. So hire somebody who is a person you feel comfortable with and who will regularly talk to you when you have questions. Now, once that has been decided, then of course there are the legal fees. And as I said, they do vary largely. But remember that initial cost does not imply real cost. There are some attorneys, not necessarily in your locality, but around many large cities, for example, who charge highly competitive rates that give them business. But you have to be careful because the possibility that those rates actually reflect a non-full service law firm and filing has unfortunately been occurring. So the lowest fee isn't always the best service by far. And as I said, your case could have some complexity, but for cases that aren't complex, under the new law, we typically see fees of $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 for a Chapter 7 simple kind of bankruptcy, and $1,300, $1,600, $2,000 for a simple Chapter 13 bankruptcy where a plan has to be done and it's more of a complicated bankruptcy, even though it may be relatively simple by Chapter 13 standards. So, of course, one has to figure out what is best for them, what kind of services they're getting, how comfortable one is with the law firm, and finally, how one could come up with the money. When one is reaching the point of bankruptcy with no money flowing in their life, this is not an easy situation. But as I have pointed out in the past, this is a very useful expenditure of money. If one is spending, let's say, $1,000 and getting rid of $50,000 in debt, that is a great fresh start from a financial point of view. Having lived in Las Vegas a little while and never having gambled, but watching people who gambled, I often think of those people who would take $1,000 and walk away with $50,000. That would be a very good investment if it really happened. Living in the upside down world of bankruptcy, where in effect, the more negative numbers gives one an advantage. Paying $1,000, as I said, to get rid of $50,000 is kind of the inverse of the Las Vegas gambling success. And yet, it is an unbelievable fresh start for most people and an expenditure that is well worth the result. One has to figure out ways to get the money together to pay for the bankruptcy. It may take some while. It may take a second job. It may take a friend or relative who comes forward and offers the money. But in every event, it takes some need to free up the cash to move ahead with the bankruptcy, particularly the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, because by law, it cannot be filed until all of the costs and fees are paid. Otherwise, the attorney would be a creditor of the estate and would be discharging him or herself in the process. Yet, it is inevitable that people do come up with the money. As we've mentioned, 1.4 million families will be filing bankruptcy this year. It is predicted, and we're getting close. And they all came up with the money to pay for the bankruptcy. So we see that in America, there are people out there who are saving up to go broke. Yet in that process, that is a tremendous opportunity to rebuild one's life financially, emotionally, relationship-wise, and to allow the creative energies to continue to flow without being burdened by an immense amount of stress and strain from past debt. So if you have reached this juncture in your financial challenge, make sure you find someone to represent you who is specialized in this area and who can explain things to your level of understanding and to your satisfaction, and who is charging fees that are reasonable and for the maximum services that you need and want in your case. And with all of that, you will find that a lot of intelligence has gone into the entire concept of bankruptcy, and more importantly, a lot of human empathy stands behind it. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt manageable life. Oh.